Once again, I have a request to give a talk on a subject which I have skirted around in previous talks. Sometimes I've mentioned it as part of a talk, but never focusing on it as the main theme. And that is the subject of envy and jealousy. Because sometimes that happens to people. Sometimes people, they just long to be beautiful, to be happy, to want for nothing, to be able to travel around the world and have a good time. And what do they really want to be? They just want to be like me. I'm beautiful, maybe. I want for nothing. I'm happy. I travel around the world. So, what do you really want? And why is it that people just lose so much happiness and so much peace and joy wanting to be like somebody else? And of course, I've been old enough now, many years as a monk, to have actually seen many, many different aspects of life, to be able to hang out with mega wealthy people and be in palaces with royalty, and at the same time, or a few days later, going to morgues or going to the builder's place and just getting all the building material and just laying bricks. I've done some of the very highest to the very, very lowest. And so I've been there, done that in my years as a monk, and I've had some really interesting experience. I was just talking about morgues. One of the best morgues I ever went to was in Thailand in Sirirat Hospital. And it was about 38 years ago. As a monk, you were just allowed just to walk in without anybody to stop you. You didn't need ID. So I went to the place, the room where they did the autopsies. I arrived about 15 minutes earlier, so I had the place to myself. And it was like a lecture theatre with a slab in the middle. And as I walked up to the seats, I saw the windows, which were high up like many lecture theatres, and I couldn't believe it. It looked like there was a head, a severed head, on a plate, on the windowsill, where you'd usually expect a flower pot. Instead of the flower pot, there was a head. I thought this must be a plastic one. But I went up, and no, it was a real one. I touched it. That was cool. Only in those days could you go to a place and have it. I don't know who it belonged to, but they weren't missing it, so it was okay. So you do that, and at the same time you can go into palaces and just, you know, see these really important people. But do you envy me? Because one comes with the other. The only way to get into a palace is first of all trained by going to autopsies and seeing severed heads. Is that the case? But whatever. I remember in the early years as being a monk, I was always very jealous of the senior monks. Because in those days in northeast Thailand, it was very, very, very austere. We didn't have cushions like we have these days, with these very, very soft zafus. We didn't have carpet on the floor. It was concrete, hard, cold concrete. And even the concrete people who laid it were just the villagers. They couldn't even lay that smooth. It was bumpy concrete. And I wasn't I wasn't going to say fat, as comfortable as I am these days. I was really thin, all skin and bones, because the food was terrible there. So there you were, just a tiny bit of skin covering your bones, sitting on this hard concrete for hours and hours. And you saw the senior monks, all these abbots in Thailand. They had these huge cushions, much bigger than these ones. And I thought to myself, they don't need those cushions, because they've got their own upholstery, what I've got now. Especially on their bottom. It's amazing just how fat those senior monks were. And I was so jealous. I thought, if only I could get one of those cushions. And also, those senior monks in those days, they didn't need the cushions. They were all enlightened. I mean, I was only starting off. I needed my bit of comfort. And not only that, but those senior monks, they always had the best food. The food was passed down the line. And so the abbots, they had the first choice of the food. When it got back to me, only the gravy was left. Even the vegetables had all gone. And I thought, that's really unfair. Because again, those senior monks, they've been monks for years. They didn't have any craving. I'd only started. I had lots of craving. They should give me first choice. And not only that, they made me work really hard. We had to do all the labouring and all the services. Well, all those senior monks, they just sat and talked to people all day and drank tea. And I was so jealous of those senior monks. Now, I'm a senior monk. That's what I do all day, sit and talk to people and drink tea. I've got a fat bottom. I get the first choice of food. And now I'm jealous of the junior monks. So they can just go back after the meal and lay down. They don't have to talk to people all day. They don't have to figure out all the work. They don't have to do all of this. And I figured out a long time ago that the reason for such jealousy and envy is called stupidity. And the way to overcome that is to realize as a junior monk, when I was very thin and hungry and working hard, I had what we call junior monk suffering. I don't have that anymore. Now I'm fat and I can get the first choice of food and have lots of cups of tea and I don't need to work so hard. Now I've got abbot suffering. I don't have junior monk suffering anymore. And that is what taught me what real jealousy is. We recognize our own suffering, that in your position, whoever you are, whatever you are experiencing, yeah, it's not that good sometimes. And you look at other people and think, oh, if only I were like them, I would not have any suffering anymore. But no, you let go of one form of suffering and you only get another form of suffering. Do you like to be rich? Would you like to win the lottery this weekend? If you do, you are stupid. Absolutely ridiculous. It is true that right now you may have what we call poor person suffering. And if you win the lottery, you won't have poor person suffering anymore. You won't need to queue for the buses to get yourself home. You won't need, you know, to wonder about the credit card, whether you've got enough money to pay your bills. You won't need to sort of have to go to work early in the morning every day to do a job you really hate just to pay your bills. You won't have that suffering anymore. You will have what we call rich person suffering. And you ask any rich person, and yeah, they have rich person suffering. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I went to give a blessing at a person's house. It's what people actually do, even rich people. I just heard that the founder of Facebook, what's his name again? Yeah, whatever his name is, it's too long for me to remember at my age. But anyway, his house, he had it blessed by monks, so he must be a Buddhist. It's just what we guys do. And I can really feel for the monks who went to bless this guy's house, the founder of Facebook. Because I went to bless a rich person's house over in Shelley once, you know, one of these waterfront mansions. And when I arrived there to do the blessing, you know, all the way traveling from Serpentine, where our monastery is, I needed to go to the toilet. And so I asked the woman, where is the toilet? And this is no exaggeration. She had to draw me a map of how to get there. There were so many rooms and passageways. It wasn't just like in your place. It's the room on the left. It's go down the passageway, turn left, up the stairs, down. It was just a huge mansion. And after doing the blessing, which took a long time, I asked her, how many people live here? And that's when she said, only me. She lived in this incredibly huge, I don't know, 10 bedrooms or whatever, and she lived there alone. And I asked why. And she told me she's afraid. She's afraid of her relations. Because when they come, they always ask for money. They ask for a loan or some investment in some business project they have. The same with friends. Any friends, she's afraid they will ask for some of her money as well. She's so afraid. She lives by herself. That's called rich person suffering. You can't trust people anymore. Are they a friend of you, or are they a friend of your bank account? Why are they visiting? Sometimes we just don't know, and we doubt, which means we can't have real friendship. If you meet somebody and they say they're wealthy, are you really looking at them? Or are you looking at just how wealthy they are? It's very difficult, and that's why many rich people have a lot of suffering. Many people who do win that lottery have often said, and this is true, that was the worst thing that ever happened to me. The reason they say that is because they lose all their friends. And they lose the trust they have with other people. What is most important in life? Your friends or the bank balance? There is such a thing called rich person suffering. Indeed, it's so well known that many scientific studies have been done throughout the world. Studies which say, yes, if you have too much money, it's just so difficult. Worrying about the stock market, worrying about the tax man, worrying about how you can use that money and invest it when everybody's asking you. And we also know that too little money is also suffering when you can't afford to pay the bills. So that many scientists, social scientists and psychologists a long time ago, they worked out the optimum income. Many years ago, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, it was worked out here in Australia. The optimum income for a single person was roughly about 50,000-60,000 Australian dollars a year. More than that, and you have many problems. How to invest it, you know, what to do with it. Less than that, you have a lot of difficulty not being able to afford, you know, the pleasures of life. It may be more than that now or less than that, but there is an optimum income. Too much, it's more suffering. When I first announced that $50,000-$60,000 was the optimum income, I did make an offer to make people earning more than that happy. I said, if you want to be happy, I could help you become happier. Anything over $50,000-$60,000, you can put it in the donation box, and I guarantee, scientific proof, you will be happier. And our treasury will be very happy too. It didn't work. Shows you that people don't trust science. But there is an optimum amount of income, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get less, sometimes you get more. But whatever it is, please don't envy. You know, a lot of rich people, they envy poor people. They envy, I wish I could live like you with no worries. And the same time as poor people envy rich people. What are you doing? What you're not realizing is that rich people have rich people suffering. Poor people have poor people suffering. People who get the promotion at work, do you feel jealous of them? Why did they get the promotion? If you think about it, the higher you go on that corporate ladder, the harder you have to work and the more stress you have. Haven't you got enough stress already? That's why many of you come here, because you're so stressed out. So if you're passed for the next promotion, you should feel so grateful. Oh, thank God, I'm not going to get more stressed out. I can hardly take the stress I've already got. And don't ever think, okay, if I get the promotion, I'll get more money. Yeah, you do get more money, but is it ever enough? Hands up if you've got enough money. Hands up if your salary is enough. I'm going to tell your bosses when you go to work tomorrow morning. The majority of you didn't put your hands up, by the way, because you can always use a bit more. That's what it is. No matter how much you have, it's never enough. You can always use more. So I always say that what you've got already is enough. Enough to get by. And if you realize that, then you never feel envy about someone who gets a promotion and you don't. You just feel, oh, fine, let them have the extra stress. I'll just be happy with what I have. You know that I was wise enough when I first came here to be so lucky, to feel so much gratitude that I was the second monk, not the top monk. There was another monk who was here before me, Ajahn Chakwe. He was the abbot, and I had it all planned. I'd just be the second monk for the rest of my life, just having no responsibilities, just taking it easy. You know, it's called like tailgating. You never, if you are riding a bicycle, get behind a truck, and then you don't have to pedal so hard. And anyway, the front vehicle is the one which gets all the bugs on the windscreen. So that was, the abbot in those days. But something, my plans all went wrong, and then he sort of described, and so I was left, being the abbot here. I never planned that at all. And so I had no envy at all, no sort of idea, because I knew, what do you want that job for? That's where you get all the problems and difficulties. So you don't really want promotion. To be envious of someone who's getting promoted is absolutely ridiculous. Even somebody said they got a lot of envy about traveling. Imagine traveling over the world. Tomorrow I go to Kuala Lumpur. The next month, where do I go next month? Next month I go to teach this retreat at Phuket. And month afterwards I go to Frankfurt to teach another retreat. Ajahn Brahm, traveling all over the world. Isn't it wonderful? Come on. Have you ever stood in queue at the airport waiting to get checked and patted down, for just whatever they think you've got? Unfortunately, in some countries, because you've got a robe on, they're not quite sure what religion you are. And they think you might be hiding something underneath. And so sometimes I get the pat down. And I remember in the United States, they said, that's because you're wearing a robe. I said, but I'm a monk. Look, as a monk, we don't wear underpants. That's the truth. So I can't hide any bomb anywhere. They didn't think that was funny. And that traveling is a big pain. How many times when you've traveled, you've gone overseas, you just can't wait to get there? I see that in airports, going there tomorrow. People, they queue up trying to get on the aircraft first. And what are you doing that for? The same people who try and get off on first are the ones who try and get off first. So at least you should be consistent. If you want to get on first, that means you must like the thing. You must want to try and get off last. That makes more sense to me. As for me, I try and get on last and get off first. Because you're all cramped up in this little tube all the time. It's bad for your breathing, bad for everything. What do you want to do that for? Do you really like traveling like that, cooped up like a little sardine in a box? Eating this food which is just brought up to you, you don't know what you're eating. And, some of you watch these stupid movies all the time. Oh, it's just so, really, just so hard. And so why do you want to go traveling for? And when you get there, you have to check in everywhere and do all this stuff. Do you really like traveling? Why do people do it? It's much nicer to stay at home. Isn't that the case? There's no place like home. You spend so much money on your house, so much money on making a beautiful kitchen and a lounge, and you've got these great computers and big screens now. You don't need to go traveling anymore. You just see everything on the internet. If you want to see the Great Wall of China, just click in Great Wall of China. You can see it right there. You don't need to go and see the Taj Mahal. Just you can get a photo of it. What's the big deal? The really big deal is that sometimes we just love suffering. And it is suffering, isn't it? Just traveling all over the world. And I do it a lot, so I know I have traveling monk suffering. And that's my suffering. I have to get up really early tomorrow morning to get to the airport in time to queue up and check in. And if it wasn't traveling tomorrow morning, I could have a nice sleep in the morning. And where I'm going to stay tomorrow night, I don't know. There's no place like your own bed. Don't you love your own bed? So why do you keep leaving it by going overseas? You've got your own bed, your nice garden, your friends, everything is nice. The thing is that sometimes we are envious. What it really is, deep down, we always think that wanting something else will make us happy. If you're not a traveler, You think, if I travel, then I'll be happy. If you are a traveller, you think, if I stop travelling, then I'll be happy. It's all this terrible thing about wanting. I remember a story of this farmer in New Zealand. He was one of these people who was really having a hard time making ends meet. And he was also very, very stingy. So when he had some hay which was going mouldy, instead of throwing it away, he insisted on feeding it to his cows. And his cows just would not eat that hay. You know, even though they were a bit hungry, they were not going to eat mouldy hay. Even if you're hungry, would you like to eat like mouldy rice or mouldy chips? No way. So the cows refused to eat it. So he thought, how can I get the cows to eat it? So he decided to mix up the mouldy hay with fresh hay. Now thinking that we will be able to trick the stupid cows into eating the hay. But did they eat the mouldy hay? No, they just separated the good hay from the mouldy hay, ate the good stuff and left the mouldy stuff. So he's still left with his mouldy hay. Until he had this beautiful brainwave on how to get the cows to eat the mouldy hay. If ever you've been to a farm, you would notice that so many cows push their head through the fence to eat the grass just on the other side. So that's what he did. He put the mouldy grass outside the paddock on the other side of the fence, but not too far, just far enough. If a cow pushed their head through the hole in the fence and stretched, they could reach it. And the mouldy hay was gone within 24 hours. Now, that really shows just the nature of not just cows, but human beings who have desire. If it's on the other side of the fence, it doesn't matter if it's mouldy, I want it. So if it's on just what you can't get, or what's forbidden, what's on the other side of the fences of life, that's what we want, and that is what envy is. Because you can't get it, that is what makes it attractive. That's why you want it. And when you get it, it's all mouldy hay. Travelling overseas is mouldy hay. Being rich is mouldy hay. Being famous or being beautiful is mouldy hay. Look, I've met a few women who are, you know, really beautiful women, and they come and tell me just how difficult it is to live with that. People see them, especially boys, and that's all they see. Wow, she's drop dead gorgeous. She's amazing. She's wonderful. But it's very difficult. No one takes them seriously. They're just a beautiful face, that's all. Beautiful figure. They don't see the person, they just see the body. And if ever you talk to a woman who's like that, it's a curse. It's not a sort of a wonderful thing. So don't try and be too beautiful. It's the same as like being too rich. I said this, I think, a couple of weeks ago here. If you are a boy, never ever marry a beautiful girl. Please just don't do that. Because if you marry a beautiful woman, you'll be jealous for the rest of your life. Because other guys would like to, you know, to go out with them, and you can't trust them. What's she doing? And if you marry a rich boy, never marry a rich boy if you're a girl. If you marry a rich boy, he can afford many mistresses. If you marry an ugly girl, you're absolutely safe for the rest of your life. She's so grateful she's got a partner. That, you know, you don't have to worry, you know, when you're way up north working in the mines. And it's the same if you marry a poor boy. If he's really a poor man, he can't afford a mistress. So again, you're perfectly safe. So that's my advice for life. You know, go, ugly girls, go, poor boys. You know, you're the ones who should really sort of get all the propositions. When you look at it that way, there is suffering if you're very beautiful and very rich. So don't be envious of these things. All it is not realizing whatever side of the fence you're on. If it's, I'm on this side and they're on the other side, I just want. You don't realize what they have to go through. You know, one of the worst things is politics. You know, people are really envious and jealous. They just really want to get elected. They want to be the boss. They want to be the prime minister and the president. And I remember a long time ago, someone told me, anybody who really wants to be a prime minister, wants to be president, there's a very dangerous, you know, mental illness. wanting to be in that position. You know, really, they should be pressurized. You know, find out a person who is skillful and just, you know, shanghai them into that position. Because if they want to be, that's very, very worrisome. Why would anybody want to be in that position? Because, you know, having met a few presidents and prime ministers, it's a terrible situation to be in. It's bad enough being Ajahn Brahm. Being a president, everything you say, everything you do, someone's got a photograph, you know, of you. I remember poor old Jeff Gallop, you know, he was a good friend, the former Premier of Western Australia. No, he actually one day was caught on camera, you know, with his finger in his ear. And that was on a big billboard during an election. No, poor fellow. So even just one little mistake and everybody sees it. Look at the cartoons in the newspaper of what they do to politicians and prime ministers in this country. Look at, you know, our Prime Minister, Julia Gillard. I've actually seen her. Her bottom is nowhere near as big as they put in the cartoons. Poor girl. So they have a lot of suffering. So don't be envious of those people. I remember reading as a student, you know, one of the great philosophical books, Plato's Republic, you know, this great Greek, amazing Greek philosopher. And in the last chapter of that book, of Plato's Republic, was the idea at that time of reincarnation. All those great Greek philosophers, you know, they taught reincarnation. That was just accepted as a truth. Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, they were all reincarnationists. It was part of European culture in those days. But the interesting point was that in their description of the process of reincarnation, they would go, it was like they went over the river Styx. That was their little river. And the ferryman would take them across, and they would they would still retain their memories. And they would go to the Elysian Fields. You know, these are words which you may have heard before, and this is actually where they came from. The Elysian Fields, where you can rest and relax and have a good time before you take your new rebirth. You go across another river, River Leith, and there you lose all your memories. So when you're born, you're fresh, you don't remember your past lives. And that was the Greek idea of rebirth. But what really stuck out with that idea was that in that description of the reincarnation process, every person could choose their rebirth. You had free choice. What did you want to be in your next life? And they said the stupid people, the ones who were really idiot and hadn't learned a thing, wanted to be rich and famous. They were the people that were just, you know, ridiculous. Why would you want to be rich and famous? And Plato said the really wise ones were the ones who wanted to be ordinary. Not too beautiful, not too ugly, not too rich, not too poor, not too famous, not too infamous. Because they realized then that that was the optimum happiness to be found in life. The average, what in Buddhism we call the middle way. So those of you who are not too rich and not too poor, you have reached perfection. Don't buy that lottery ticket. You will spoil your happiness. Those of you who are not too pretty, but not too ugly, just the average, you are the peak of perfection. You don't have to have a photograph in front of your face. You are regarded as a human being, not some sort of sexual object. You're a person, not a desire. And those of you who are not too famous, not too infamous, again, you're at the peak. Don't spoil it by doing something which makes you in the front page of the newspapers. Stay where you are. That is the very, very best. Which gets you back to the core teachings, what we do here. That what you have is good enough. Where you are is a wonderful place to be. So the way to overcome this envy and jealousy for something you don't have is, number one, realizing wherever you are, it's never absolutely what you want. There's always suffering there. And instead, to supplanting envy and jealousy with this beautiful sense of gratitude and appreciation. I already mentioned this wonderful word, this is good enough. my wife, yeah, she may not be supermodel, and that's this wonderful thing. She may not be ugly, but maybe next time I could choose better. She's good enough. My husband, he's not the richest person in this world. He's not Andrew Forrest, but he's not the poorest person. Next time I'll try and choose a poorer one, and then I'll have much more appreciation from him. But at least he's good enough. Me, I may not be the most successful person in the planet, but at least I am good enough. Appreciate what you have. In that appreciation of what you have, that gratitude for what you have, all the envy vanishes. Yeah, I'm now the fat monk, which I envied when I was young. And now I wish I was a young monk who didn't have so much work to do. Yeah, now I travel around a lot. And now I wish I was that monk who never went anywhere, could just sit in his hut and meditate all day. But I have gratitude. I am happy where I am. So whatever I have to do in life, I just make peace with it, be kind, be gentle, and appreciate it. I don't envy anybody else. Recently, I went on a tour. The last tour I went overseas was to Indonesia. I did about 11 cities in 12 days with thousands of people. I spent hours, literally hours, this is no exaggeration, sitting at a desk, signing a book, and smiling for the camera. Signing a book, smiling, signing a book, smiling. After 2 hours, you know, your jaw starts to get stuck in that position. It starts to really ache. And I did catch myself thinking, what am I doing this for? I don't want to do this. Let somebody else, you know, get a cardboard cutout, you know, and take a photo of that for goodness. Go on Facebook or whatever. There's photos of me there. You can on Photoshop, you can get a really nice photo of me or anybody and put yourself next to it. You can put your hands around Obama if you really want to. You can do that on Photoshop. So why do you... But instead of being grumpy and being negative, which is where envy is coming from, I said, no, I'm just happy to be here. I'm just happy to be here, just doing this wonderful service and making another person happy. Yeah, there's thousands of people. This person is the first time they've seen me. Forget about all the other persons. Person in front of you, they are important. And I reminded me of that great story in Opening the Door of Your Heart, of the Emperor's Three Questions. And the most important time, when is the most important time? Now. It's the only time you ever have. The only time I have in life is now. When you say you don't have any time, that's wrong. You have time. You have now. We always have now. So don't think, I've got no time. You have time. Now. It's the only time you ever have. Who is the most important person? The one right in front of you. So you're the most important person now. No, you are. No, you are. No, you are in the corner over there. You're the most important person in the world right now for me. Cool, isn't it? Not anymore, though. But that is such an important thing to know that. The one in front of you right now is the most important person in the world. So where's the envy? It's not wanting anything more. And the most important thing to do is to care. Just to care for this moment, care for this person, care for yourself. Now's the most important time. The one in front of you is the most important person. The most important thing to do is to care. Incredibly powerful teaching. And if you practice like that, there's no more envy anymore. The job you're in is really important. That's wonderful. Enjoy it. This is really important. The job right in front of you. You're traveling. Being on the aircraft right now is really important. So care for it. Enjoy it. And with that non-judging, that appreciation of every moment, it's so powerful the effect that has. That's one of the reasons why you can connect with people. You know, when I sort of talk to a person, people say, I can connect with you, and I'm looking you in the eye, and really, that's what I feel, that you are the most important person. I really respect you, no matter who you are, no matter how tired I am. And I really try and care the best I possibly can. And do that, and that is the secret of success, and there's no way any envy or jealousy can come in. because you're appreciating this moment, just being grateful to be here. And the other little story which emphasizes this is, I'm not sure what book this is in. It may be in another book which I wrote, because I write so many books now, I don't know what I've written. That's why sometimes I repeat myself, but never mind, that's the way it is. But anyhow, this particular story was, I usually tell this on retreats, I think very rarely do I tell here, was a story again about sort of how to be grateful and how to want to be here. Because that was a story when somebody asked a monk who was visiting a prison. It was the Casuarina jail over in, it's in Casuarina on Thomas Road, just off Thomas Road. He was visiting there teaching meditation to prisoners, and one evening they asked the monk, can you stay a bit longer? We just want to have a chat with you. So they gave him a cup of tea and some chocolate. You know, monks will stay on for anything, for a cup of tea and some chocolate. And that's what he did. And they started asking him, like, simple questions. Like the questions about, what is it like being a monk? And so he went through the daily routine of being a monk at Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine. And so he started, in the morning, we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And at that, the prisoner said, 4 o'clock? Even in prison, even murderers don't have to get up until six. What did you monks do to have to get up so early? I said, what do you do? Can you watch the late night movie? He said, no, there's no TVs in monastery. All we do is meditate. I said, well, okay, I suppose that's what monks are supposed to do. But then what do you do for breakfast? And in breakfast, we usually have like a mug. I have a mug with porridge in it. I said, that's all? In prison, in Australia, you can get bacon, you can get eggs, you can get pancakes, you can get cereals. No, 10 different choices. You can get full cream milk, you know, zero calcium milk, soya milk, rice milk. So not in monastery, we just know whatever we're given. So then, well, what do you do after breakfast? And we work. Even I have to work. This morning I was up on the roof, you know, putting in the ceiling in Jhana Grove, working really hard. You know, Sasana Dadja was with me, he was helping me work. We worked really, really hard. You know what the prisoners said when they heard how hard we work? The prisoners say, we wouldn't work that hard. They wouldn't get us to work that hard. Not in prison. We go on strike. Now, what do you have for lunch? Yeah, we have a big lunch, but you have to eat it all in one bowl. You go down a certain time, you can actually see it all in one bowl. I had some, Goi Borchi. You know, this is a sweet the other day. And had it, you know, it's like a banana in coconut and sugar. It's very, very delicious. And they put it in a little cup for me, just inside the bowl. But the person who took it up spilt it, and it went all over the spaghetti. When was that, last Tuesday or Wednesday or something? That's true, that happens. And they thought, oh, that's disgusting, said the prisoners. Because even in solitary confinement, they give you a little tray with compartments. We don't have compartments in our bowl. It all gets all... And that's true, I have had ice cream on curry. You should try it one day. It's disgusting. But then they say, what do you do afterwards? Now, can you play sport? We can't play sport as monks. And there's a good reason for that. This is the usual story I say, because many, many years ago, I thought of starting a Buddhist football team. You know, so we can actually play the Christians, the Catholics, and the Anglicans. It'd be like a good way to get interfaith, you know, relations going. You know, just play sport together, get to know each other, and have a peaceful world. But I thought, if it was like a Buddhist football team, we have to play on Buddhist principles. Number one, you know, let go. If you want the ball, you know, take it. Number two, compassion, you know, kindness. If they can't score a goal, we score one for them. Own goals. And if it was a cricket team, we'd always toss the ball high and you know, instead of catching it, because it really disappoints, you know, the team if they get caught, so we'd always drop it on purpose. So that's why we've got no Buddhist sports teams. But no, we meditate in the afternoon. Oh, gee. And then what about dinner, they said. monks and nuns, we don't have dinner. That lunchtime is our last meal of the day. And that really surprised those prisoners. They said, don't they feed you in the afternoon? He said, no, that's it, just lunch. That's terrible. So, you know, what do? You know, in the evening, you know, can you, play ping pong or, play cards, have a game of poker? He said, no, we can't do that, we just meditate. And they said, don't you get tired of meditating? The monk said, yeah, sometimes. What time do you go to bed? Bed, he said. We don't have beds, we sleep on the floor. I sleep on the floor. Even though I'm Abba, I still sleep on the floor. In my cave, many of you have seen that. And they said, that's terrible. That's disgusting. That's awful, because they like this monk. And one of them liked this monk so much, he said, that's terrible in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead? Which meant coming into jail. And he had a point. Because in prison it's much more comfortable than in Bodhinyana Monastery or Dhammasara Nuns Monastery. You get 3 or 4 meals a day there. You can get to watch TV. You can choose what you eat. You don't have to work so hard. You don't have to give talks on a Friday evening. And if you really want to go on retreat, you just punch a prison officer. You get solitary for 9 days. You do your own meditation retreat. Very good. But now when he told me the story, I realized that what's the difference between a prison and a Buddhist monastery? The only difference is, in a monastery, people want to be there. In a prison, people don't want to be there. And that's the difference between freedom and being in prison. Any place you don't want to be is a prison for you. If you're in a relationship you don't like, you don't want to be there, your relationship feels like a prison. If you're in a job you hate, that's like going to prison every Monday morning. If you're in an old body which is getting sick and dying, your body feels like a prison. It's very easy to escape the prisons of life. You do not need to change your partner. You don't need to change your job or to heal your body to be free. Change your attitude. Want to be here. And then you're free. You don't have to have the most comfortable place to feel free. Otherwise people in Bodhinyana Monastery would not feel free. Being free is wanting to be here. Wanting to be somewhere else is being in prison. That's the difference. Now you understand what envy is. Wanting to be somewhere else. Wanting to do something else. You just made another prison for yourself. More suffering. You don't need that at all. If you can just change attitude. Want to be here. Want to be in the place you've arrived at. Want to be in your job, want to be in your body, want to be in your country, want to be here. And then you feel all the freedom in the whole world. That is how to be free. Which means no more envy or jealousy. In your old body, in your sort of situation, rich or poor, in your job, in your health or sickness, whatever you have. Can you not want to be here? No envy or jealousy or wanting to be somewhere else. Just happy to be here. And then you find you are free. And there is the end of all envy, all jealousy, and at the same time, all suffering as well. It's a strange thing that when you really want to be here, and you stay here a little while, you find it's not such a bad place. You've been running away from here for most of your life, trying to get somewhere else, always wanting to be somewhere else, to get somewhere else, to achieve something more, never appreciating where you are. The more you want to be here, the more free you feel. And that's the secret of freedom. It doesn't matter where you are. In a monastery where you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, being an abbot who has to talk and talk and get up early in the morning and travel on this stupid aircraft and have your photograph taken and just answer stupid questions or intelligent questions as well. Whatever the questions, they're all just questions. That is how you can feel totally free, wanting to be who you are, wanting to be where you are, just being happy to be here. That's the end of envy. Thank you for listening. Okay, now we have the questions from overseas. Well, not really overseas. This one's from Melbourne. One from Melbourne, one from England, one from Christchurch. Oh, that's nice. Evelyn from Melbourne. How to face up to people who control our freedom? To find out who that person is who controls your freedom. And I'll tell who that person is. Evelyn, it is you. You're the only person who can control your freedom. No one else can. Only you. That's why one of the great realizations is I never permit anyone to control my happiness. My happiness is my business. So somebody can criticize me, shout at me, say I'm stupid. I don't get upset. I don't allow other people to steal my happiness. No more than you allow people to steal your other material possessions from your house. You have locks and burglar alarms, so no one can steal the things you really care for. Why do you allow other people to steal your happiness? By reacting to what they say. People can say whatever they like, but I won't allow them to take away my happiness. I decide I'm going to be happy and that's it. You can say whatever you like, do whatever you want, I'm going to be happy and that's it. When you realize that it's only you who can control your happiness, no one else can. It's a great realization. You don't need to be upset anymore or angry. The same with your freedom. There's only one person who controls your freedom, and that's you. Even if you're in prison, they don't control your freedom. Remember Nelson Mandela? And apparently he wrote he remembered this poem, Invictus. Even in prison, you are not confined. You can still be free. I think Invictus meant something. I think there was a movie made about it or something. He said the whole thing means unconquered. So no one could control him, even though they put him in prison for 26 years. He was still free. Now you understand why he was such a great person, because he never allowed other people to control his freedom. You can put the body in jail, but that doesn't control your freedom. The freedom is in your mind, the freedom to be, the freedom to be happy. The freedom to think. Who can control that? Most important, the freedom to be at peace. No one can control that. If you understand what I mean, you understand a great insight into the nature of the mind. Now, hey, this has changed. This is now Paul from Lancaster, England. So someone just got bounced off. I'm sorry about that. Paul from Lancaster, England, how should we keep ourselves balanced when faced with unemployment whilst our friends are in secure jobs and doing well? It's the only time I feel rather jealous. If you're unemployed, you're free. Look at them. Go and visit them on a Monday morning when they're getting ready to go to work. And you actually see that even in unemployment, there's actually a lot of freedom there. Okay, you haven't got much money. But I haven't got much money either. You can actually learn to live very, very simply. And I know sort of this is Lancaster in England. In England, there is still a pretty good social security network, which means you can never actually have to starve. You can always get enough to eat and a place for you to stay at night. That's really all you truly need. And you have all that free time. In that free time, if you want to study, if you want to meditate, you have time which other people just don't have. So if you are unemployed, brilliant. Use the time. Go to the courses or whatever. If you're unemployed, you can probably get onto them for free. Meditate, learn, go to the library, make use of that time. And then sometimes that unemployment, you say, what a wonderful time that was. I really made use of it. But if you waste the time wanting to get a job, and worrying about getting a job and sort of being fed up, you can't get a job, obviously that's wasting time. Enjoy it while you have it. That's why I say even being sick, it's a wonderful blessing. You can sleep in, you can have a nice time, you don't have to go to work. People come and visit you. Often, I think I gave a talk like that. Sort of sometimes it's good to even pretend to be sick so you can get visited by the people you love. But anyhow, no. So yeah, they're in secure jobs and doing well. Look, there's no such thing as a secure job. Except maybe my job, that's pretty secure. But there's no such thing as a secure job in our modern world. And doing well, look, I've seen so many people so-called doing well. Unfortunately, and a few days later, they commit suicide. Now, you've seen that happen many times. Doing well outside is not really the measure of happiness. It's doing well inside. Inside your heart, in your emotional, mental world. That's the most important world. To be doing well in that, that is success in life. And that doesn't matter whether you've got a job or whether you're unemployed. Doing well, it means having peace in your heart. Unfortunately, there are many people unemployed who are doing well. They're at peace, they're happy. They're living a rich life. And lastly, from Christchurch, in a book I read, some have described, near-death experiences as immensely joyful, blissful, beautiful experience, while some have described near-death experiences as going to a dark space with frightening experience. Is this a reflection of the person's karma or goodness? Very much so. It's the attitude which we have to everything in life. The attitude to unemployed. I don't want to be unemployed. The attitude which we have. I don't want to have my photograph taken for hours on end. The attitude, I don't want to, you know, have to sort of sit here listening to this stuff. I don't want to listen to my wife, blag-dag-dag. I don't want to have this husband, no. That type of negative attitude which we bring to so many things in life, that is what will you carry with you when you pass. It's that attitudes of life, that fault-finding, that negativity. If one has a very positive mind and is so grateful to be here and so happy just to be with people and not judging, then of course that is the attitude which one will take with you into a near-death experience. It'll be beautiful and peaceful and loving because that's the sort of attitude you have to things. I remember reading one of the monks, a German monk, had a book of people who had near-death experiences. And one of the stories stood out. It was of a young boy, 6 or 7 year old, you know, who died on some operating table. And he described his experience, you know, before he came back to life again, just walking through this forest and meeting this fellow in front of a shed, like a farming shed, you know, with a big book and saying, "What's your name? Your name's not in here. You have to go back." You know, this is usually the metaphors which we make up for those experiences. But the guy in the shed said, "While you're here, you might as well hang around and just see how it all works." So this young kid stayed for a little while, and the next person came along was a German farmer. And this guy, you know, noted his name and said, "Did you ever lie, you know, when you were alive?" And he said, "Oh, no, hardly ever, not at all." And the guy with the book turned to the kid and said, "Look, you know, even now he lies through his teeth. He was such a big liar." And then this boy noticed another guy who just walked right past the shed. And he said, "Aren't you going to sort of judge him as well?" And the guy with the book told the boy, "That man never judged anyone in his whole life. Therefore, we're not judging him." And that was a part of the story which I thought was just so beautiful. If you've got that beautiful attitude, that's what you take with you. If you're a liar, you will lie. If you're non-judgmental, no one will judge you. If you're kind, people will be kind to you. If you have this beautiful, positive attitude, you appreciate the people you're with in life, appreciate the situations you're in, just happy to be here. And of course, the near-death experience will be an incredibly pleasant place to be. If you're always fault-finding and negative, then of course wherever you go, heaven will never be good enough for you. It's you make the place, not the other way around. That's the most important thing to understand. You make the place. You make the experience. Your attitude's the most important. Get the attitude right. Wherever you go in life, it's happy and peaceful and loving. Why? Because you are happy and peaceful and loving.